Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL Podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. You got me, Kevin Hagelin. You got, oh man, Corey Majors.
Oh man.
And of course, the famous Alec Medford. Gentlemen, how the heck you doing today? How the heck is everybody out there in Radioland? 877-881-1053, Franklin Frankel, Injury Attorney Text Line, or the Twitch, or the YouTube.
Doing good. I have a question for you.
Good. I have a question for you.
What is your resting MPH? Like when you're driving and you're and you zone out, what miles per hour are you driving at typically? Because I found out this morning mine's 47.
Oh.
I'm admitting I was driving.
On the highway?
No.
Oh.
Like it's a 40 MPH neighborhood, 40 to 45.
Uh-huh.
And I was driving, and I'm just, I think resting, I'm at a 47 is kind of where I am. 877-881-1053. What's your, like, on the highway, if it's 70, it's 80. 80 to 83, which is ridiculous. I don't understand why I do that. But it just feels like you're like, I'm supposed to be going at this speed.
Right.
And I think everybody has a resting MPH. I don't think there's all the people are just, they're staring at their speedometer all the time. I think we're just driving and we're like, this feels about right. And this morning I found out 47 is through that area. It's a 40 to 45 range. Sometimes it goes up and down. There I am.
If your resting number is lower, particularly on the highway, would you honk at that person? Because it feels like every person that's ever been honked at is shocked and appalled that this happened. But like, if you're driving 47, let's say, on the highway, you probably shouldn't be shocked and appalled.
Or on the highway. You shouldn't. Yeah. You should be not on the highway. You should be on the service road.
That is probably true, that somebody honked at
you. Doing the poor man's HOV somewhere, you know?
Right.
That's where you get onto the highway and off the highway and onto the highway and off the highway. That's what you're supposed to do.
Okay. Alec?
I think asking my MPH is a HIPAA violation, but I'll go and tell you that it's
not.
I'd say it's around 40 to 45 non-highway because a lot of the streets out in Mansfield, Grand Prairie area, it's usually 40.
Okay.
So, like, I'm right around the speed limit, maybe five over, but Mansfield police are out there, like,
they're
crazy.
Hot.
They are hot. So I try to be a law-abiding citizen most of the time, but it will creep up by 5 to 10 miles.
Okay. Now, speaking of hot,
oh,
have you made a poor decision or spoken poorly to somebody because it's so damn hot outside?
Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Maybe it's because your air conditioning is not moving as fast as you think it should just because it's 109 outside.
So Sunday, Kevin, we're not supposed to, by the way, we're not supposed to do things on Sunday, right? That's what I tell my sister.
It's the Sabbath.
My sister, well, that's not why, but I tell my sister it's recovery day, you know? It's a day of recovery.
That's a form of the Sabbath.
From the weekend so I can get prepared for Monday. But my sister's like, let's plan birthday parties and let's.
Oh my God, yes.
My daughter has a volleyball tournament and it's my niece and I love her, so I have to go. And but then Coach Mario's there. Shout out to Coach Mario. He coached them pretty awesome. Really good coaching. Give him a shout out. He's a Tolo, by the way. But it was hot in the facility, which, by the way, I don't know if I told you, I had been banned from. I don't know if I said that on air,
but I am aware of this.
Yeah, it was
story.
At a facility that I was banned on in my 20s, banned from in my 20s. I was playing some indoor soccer, got put into the penalty box, decided to make it a Mighty Ducks 2, shirt off, make a big scene of it, and they politely asked me to leave and never come back. The next week we had a game. I showed up and they said, we did ask you to never come back. And I was like, oh, damn. Nobody was there this time to say.
Would you have respected if there was some guy who looked like he was about 20 years older? He was like interning there and now he was the manager. And he's like, hold on. I remember you. You are banned. And he booted you out. Would you respect that?
I
would
have respected it and loved it because I don't know if the air conditioning worked in this building. So like we were sitting there in the heat the whole time. You asked the question about the heat, Kevin.
Right.
So we're done. We go to a dinner. The sun's shining through, just beating on us during this dinner. Dinner was good, though. Fantastic food. But I can't say the name of the place because you know, HIPAA violations.
That is and not so, how HIPAA works.
So we got it's in Rockwall. It overlooks the water. And so I wanted to sit outside. They said, no, let's sit inside. It was just as hot inside as it would have been outside. We were driving home, though. All the heat had gotten to me, Alec. And my wife says, hey, I got a Target order. Would you mind swinging by and picking it up? And I'm already focused on getting home and getting cool. And I looked at her and said, you got to be effing kidding me right now. At which point, I thought I was joking. She did not. And she snapped at me, and I was like, oh, no. And I decided, I'm not backing down off of this. And so that's when I told her never to talk to me again. I was like, don't talk to me ever again. And so we just drove home in silence.
You know how women are.
See, normally I'm with you, PJ, but on this one, I'm going to blame the oppressive heat. And I hope that people have a built-in heat excuse for others. Somebody snaps at you and you're like, I'm sorry, it's 108 degrees outside. Like, that wasn't me. That was the sun talking.
I did tell her when we got home, because we kind of, you know, she did eventually talk to me, which she broke the rules. I told her not to. Mm. But we did eventually talk again. And I did apologize and say, I'm sorry for what I said when I was sleepy, full, and hot.
Is that a meaningful apology for her?
Whenever she says, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. If we say, I'm sorry for what I said when I was hungry, that's an understanding.
Okay.
When you're hungry, you say things you don't mean. You're hungry and you're like, we need food right now.
I have seen those Snickers commercials.
Yeah. You're angry. And so, or hangry, as people like to say.
Right.
But you're mad. And so, yeah, I think it's okay whenever you're like, look, there were some things that weren't typical, and I said something I wouldn't have typically said if we'd have been in a cooler situation.
All right, get ready for a professional transition. Speaking of things that aren't typical, the Rangers scored a lot of runs yesterday. Go ahead and give me cut number 3.
And technically that hometown, Naperville, Illinois. Here's Langford, and he lifts one high into the air, deep left. And Tanachi going back. He's at the wall, and it is gone. Another rainbow home run for the Rangers for Wyatt, his 15th of the season. It comes with Lopez on board, and the Rangers are up now 11-2.
And that would be the final score as well. Now, we're going to go back and obviously talk about the Nimmo catch that felt like it really set the stage. But, man, oh, man, what an offensive explosion from the Texas Rangers. And in case you haven't been paying attention, somebody that I feel like has been getting a lot of crap, including from me this year, Corey Seager has turned it on. If you want to go smaller sample size, last 11 games, Corey Seager is hitting .462 with an OPS of 1.277. And so he has been absolutely astonishing offensively. And realistically, that's what you're going to need to get this offense out of the doldrums that it's been in.
Yeah, Jake Berger had the bomb last night too. But yeah, those three hits from Corey Seager, what, two doubles, you said? But that though, we keep hearing as Corey goes, so go the Rangers.
I get it.
And we were like, hold on, how's that make sense? He hasn't been good this year. Well, the Rangers haven't been good this year. But when he's been off the field, the Rangers have had these runs, and you're like, what's going on here? It is proof, though, I guess right now, that when Corey Seager's good, it makes your whole lineup a little bit better.
Not sure.
Not whenever he's bad and their lineup's still bad, but whenever he's good, you're a little bit better because it just creates some more danger across the entire lineup. Wyatt Langford was good last night. Zeke just doing Zeke things. Got to love what he's doing. And then I just thought I really enjoyed this one of those games, Kevin, I really enjoyed because, yeah, you were getting some runs every couple innings. You were feeling like you were being productive throughout the night. The Wyatt Langford home run, which was basically like that was an end of the game launch that barely got out. How is it possible that that ball went so high and looked like it was going to go so far in Chicago? I thought it was going to go into one of your pizza places.
Yeah.
And then it just barely got into the first or second row. But it was an absolute rocket too, though, man. Moonshot, if you will.
So the Rangers have now scored 16 runs in their last two games. In the previous four games, they had scored a total of 4 runs, but still went 2-2. And I think that's the part that is like mind-boggling about this team is you can have a four-game stretch where you score a total of four runs and still have a 500 record. Now you're back to 500 overall because you have won two more. They have won four of their last five, and they have scored runs these last two games. But perhaps, maybe not just as importantly, but very important as well, your pitching has continued to be very, very good. So you didn't win this game 11-8. You know, you didn't end up losing the day before because you gave up six runs versus five. You're still holding them at 3-2. And so you look at the last five games for the Rangers, they've only given up, a total of six runs. Now, part of the reason for that, go ahead and give me cut number two. And I know we can't say for sure how the start would have played out from here, but this is in the first inning, and this is Brandon Nimmo legitimately saving two runs.
The 1-0, swinging a drive, deep out into right field. Nimmo going back on this one at the wall. He leaps, and Nimmo makes the catch. Brandon Nimmo takes a two-run home run away from Andrew Benintendi. What a play by Nimmo to keep it a 2-0 ball game. Terrific catch by Nimmo.
And so Rocker ended up departing right before the end of the sixth. So a strong outing from him. But if you look back at it, man, I wonder how important that catch was by Nimmo to keep him on track for the game. Because otherwise, again, I don't know if the second inning then would have played out differently. But you, if you would have given up the two runs there, and then you give up the two runs in the second, this feels like either it's going to be a very short day for Rocker, or it could spiral into just an even worse disaster of a start. But because of that, he powers through the second and then finishes out the day with minimal damage.
The third was the most important.
Is that the bases loaded?
The bases loaded situation. The catch by Nimmo, you're right. He might not have gotten to the bases loaded situation the way that some of those pitches were looking. They might have just been like, all right, we're going to Ahlstrom. We got a bunch of lefties coming up anyway. Let's go ahead and make that move right now. But Kevin, like that play right there, dead on right. He did not start perfectly, and that's been a thing for him.
Sure.
And he's got to figure that out. We're in, year three right now, kind of looking at some of his numbers and going, man, he's grown. Mike said it. He said it a couple times. This is the most he's ever pitched in baseball.
Yep.
This is one of those things where you're like, okay, what kind of development did we see? Last night, Kevin, that moment with the bases loaded was a moment where you were like, you got to figure it out, dude. You just walked a dude that you could not find your fastball. Your slider's not working right now. What are you even going to do? And he knew exactly what the situation was about to be. And then all of a sudden, Kevin kind of found a groove and like had seven straight strikeouts or something, like something ridiculous. But that was a big boy moment for him to get out of the jam that you got yourself into, and also be able to find the vibe from there and just carry that over to the next couple innings.
And you hope it carries over into the next couple of starts, because this is something we had talked about doing last week. We could just kind of breeze through it. But CBS had put out an article saying these MLB players are running out of time to prove themselves. And one of the names on that list was Kamar Rocker. And so I decided to look a little bit more into that. And I think the concerning part about Rocker this year, since you mentioned this is the most baseball that he has played, is his ERA has gotten progressively worse month by month. Now, in April and May, you're like, that's totally fine because the ERA was 3.38 and 3.68. Fine. Don't care. That'll work for me all day, all year long. But then you continue to move and he's continuing to pitch more. 4.5 for June, 4.76 for July, and now 6 flat for August. And that includes yesterday when he only gave up two runs in 5 2/3. So it was worse before that. And it's just, you can pin all that on the Baltimore start. I get it. That did not help his cause whatsoever. But that's part of a bigger trend that I was like, man, you hate to see that. And you're right. Third year, but also he's a little bit different because he's about to be 27. Like, when the season ends, he'll be 27, which is young for a human, but not necessarily in the straight-up prospect realm for a pitcher. So I wonder if he's kind of at a, we need to him to accelerate a little bit faster.
That's an interesting question, because I don't know, what is the general time for a pitcher's peak?
That's or, I will do their research and investigation.
Or their rise. I wonder when their rise like typically starts. And we need to, we definitely knew. What was Mike Bassick's rise whenever he got to that point? That would be a good one. I was looking at overall numbers for him. And again, more innings, more starts, more opportunities this year. Last year he gave up 41 earned runs. Right now he's at 62 in innings pitched. I'm sorry, Kevin. 126 innings pitched. Yeah. He's doubled his innings pitched from last year.
Yep.
So, like, the earned runs is...
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before. And that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's fair where he is, actually a little bit better than where he was last year.
Oh, no, it's definitely better than where he was last year, for
sure. His strikeouts doubled, over doubled, and his walks are just barely under doubled.
And see, and that's the thing that I don't love, is the strikeout-to-walk ratio is still a struggle for him. He's sitting at a touch below, about 2.3. That's where he's been most of his career. And I just think if he's going to be a longer term successful starting pitcher, that needs to be better. But whether it's getting out of the jam in the third, whether it's Brandon Nimmo bailing him out in the first, either way, Kamar Rocker yesterday gave you a start that you will absolutely take. The offense finally turned it on to get you a lot of runs. And hey, they might just be 500, but your Texas Rangers are all alone in first place.
And they brought back Tank Top Tuesday single-handedly yesterday.
Yes!
So it's back, baby.
So I'm excited about that.
I know you are. I saw it on your face whenever I took my other shirt off.
Yeah!
That's right. But you know what's weird? If you just look at ESPN's numbers, there is no team in the AL West that has a 50% chance or better of making the playoffs. And I'm like, well, somebody's going to make it. Now I realize Texas is at 48, Houston's at 43. So they're like, we acknowledge somebody. But the fact that nobody in that division right now is even up to 50%, maybe they're like, hey, your first place team is 500.
Last week-ish, the Astros were at like 60%, and with one loss and one Rangers win, it just completely flipped to like 44-40-something. It was a wild transition.
I mean, and it makes sense. Look, the Rangers have won 4 of 5. You just put a thumping on the White Sox. Hopefully you can pull at least one more game out of this. Then that would be 3 straight series going into the series against Milwaukee, who they're the best team in baseball.
Allegedly.
Fair. With all due respect to the Dodgers and any other team that fits in that allegedly, I will say Milwaukee is the best team in baseball. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. Coming up next, some Dallas Cowboys news and questions of the day right here on the Fan.
And they're at the 28, and they need a touchdown. Snap to Prescott, back and standing, and fires it left, and it's caught. Pickens circles away. 10, 5, Pickens, pylon, Pickens. Touchdown, touchdown, touchdown.
3 touchdowns right there. KNC Masterpiece on 105 Through the Fan, and it's time for some Dallas Cowboys news and questions of the day. So let's start with that very George Pickens, and I really liked what he said at the end of last week, talking about his second training camp with the Cowboys. He said, last year I was learning the plays while trying to learn some of the guys. I was thinking. I was learning so much to where I was making plays, but now I'm playing faster. And you can't help but think how that could translate into the actual season. And he had a captivatingly awesome season last year. Can you imagine if whether it's he feels more comfortable physically, mentally, emotionally, whatever the case might be, that he could be even better?
Yeah. I mean, because now what you've done, the comfort part's important, I think. The part of being like, okay, I know the guys. They know what to expect from me. I do think there is something, though, with discomfort that makes you a little bit better because you always feel like you have to prove yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're in this mindset. But if you're already one of those kind of people, then you don't need that. But there is something about going into a room and going, I got to show these guys. Sometimes you press too hard. Sometimes you just elevate what your real skills are. But I think the most important thing for me is he's one of those guys, listening to him talk to G-Bag, and listening to him talk about the chess game, for me, and I discussed this a little bit yesterday with when I was talking with Mickey, is now I think he can get more creative in what he's doing. And that's where I think he's going to be better or just as good. Because when you know the plays, you can go out there and run them. But then when you know the plays and you see something in the defense because you know what this is and you also know your quarterback's thinking the same thing because he sees what you see, that's when you can really do some nasty stuff to an opponent. And that's my expectation, is that this year they take it to an even better place where you'll see some moments where that play shouldn't have happened that way, but it did because they were on the same page together.
Now, I want to ask both of y'all this. Corey, does the Dallas Cowboys preseason record matter?
It shouldn't. Without any of your starters or most of their starters playing, it's a real like gamble. But I do understand if on Kalshi. I do understand saying even our second team guys are better. And I do think that's an important thing.
Agreed.
And know what they're doing and can go out there and not look foolish. So it shouldn't, but it does.
Alec, does the Dallas Cowboys preseason record matter? You remember the very famous story that Jerry loves to say is in 89, they went 3-1 in the preseason. He's like, here we go. And they were the worst effing team in football.
Generally, I say no. This year, I will say yes, because I've felt so bad about the depth on this team for the past probably right. 2 seasons, where I'm like, okay, I think we have competitive players that can come in and fill positions when needed. So I'd say this year, yes, but generally no.
So remember, I told you it had been 9 years since the Cowboys won their first preseason game. How long do you think it's been since they won their first 2 preseason games, which they now have?
84 years.
They've not been around that long, but I believe that was a Titanic
sure
reference.
That?
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to say 30 years.
Okay. It's only been 19 years.
Oh.
I say only.
So we didn't win a Super Bowl that year either, huh?
That is true.
Hey, man.
But.
Hey, Jerry. What's up?
But.
I know he's there.
Just worry about the first part of what I'm going to tell you. Don't worry about what happened after that. That year was 2007. The Cowboys finished 13-3 and were the number one seed in the NFC. Again, don't worry about what happened after that. 13-3.
So if you think the Cowboys can win 13-plus games on Kalshi, I believe it's at like 19%.
If you think that, you can make a truckload of money, and I had to change what I was going to say on that. So, yes, I agree with that, and I think I might be prepared to raise my record prediction to 10-7. I'm still thinking it over, but I think I'm prepared to move from 9-8 to 10-7. So I just wanted to throw that out there for whatever it's worth, because I'm usually inclined to agree with y'all about preseason, but I do think the depth on depth is encouraging for the Cowboys.
Honestly, I needed to see the Barham play. I needed to see him play to get an idea of what we have. And quite honestly, I think we have a monster in the middle right now. And that's, again, it's against one of the worst rosters on the planet
right.
in Arizona. But I needed to see how he moved. And I feel like I got a vision for what they want to do with him now. Christian Parker talked about that, right? When we drafted him, we had an idea. It's starting to come to fruition, and that's what it looked like to me. So I needed to see that. Some of these corners, I needed to see Revel get out there on the field.
Yeah.
To start believing that they can actually do this against pro guys, too, and I think they can.
So yesterday...
Still going to take some time, though, in my mind.
Yesterday, Shoddy was talking about Marquise Bell. Because there's been a lot of buzz about Marquise Bell, why is he not playing? Why is he not getting these snaps? Is he going to make this roster? So Shoddy jumped out there and said, Marquise Bell is one of our most trusted players on special teams.
Okay.
All right?
So is C.J. Goodwin.
It kind of feels that way just a little bit. So with that in mind, you can talk about Marquise Bell if you like, of course. But I also want to ask, does Marist Liufau then have a place on this team? Because it does feel like people are stoked about him special teams-wise. That's why I say, does he have a place on this team and maybe not necessarily on this defense?
The way that he was going to make the team was special teams anyway. How many special teams aces can you have?
I was just wondering
if you're
that,
keeping three quarterbacks.
Well, if you're keeping three quarterbacks, you cannot keep
and,
both of them.
And you also have to consider the possibility that one of your edges or one of your linebackers might end up getting hurt.
Sure.
So, like, I think he has a role, but Kevin, I'll be honest, I've also watched some of him and I've been like, it doesn't look any different than it has in the past.
Right.
And so if that's the case, then that's where I would say, nah, he doesn't.
Okay.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
I think I've started to change my mind about this because I've really been thinking about, you know, we talked about yesterday, I think, the Dallas Morning News and their roster projections. And you went really heavy out of offensive line with 11. Now, I think that's probably at least one too many. But then I started to think, if special teams coverage-wise was such a problem for you, can you not find a workaround where you're like, hey, I need this guy for special teams?
Is he that much of a difference for you on special teams?
It does appear as though the coaches think that. Like, they have said some really positive things about him on special teams. So I'm not here to argue that Marist Liufau should replace this person or that person or the other person, like, defensively. But I do wonder if you're like, hey, we're going to go one light at this backup position because we think Liufau can make an impact on special teams, just like we think Bell can make an impact on special teams.
But
just kind of thinking out loud.
But you, at this point, you wouldn't say one light at receiver with Cam Brown and Mingo, right?
Yeah, I don't think so. Like, obviously, my default is always going to be immediately go light at corner, at quarterback, and that might not get you all the way. That might only get you one person,
mm-hmm.
and then could still leave Liufau out of the equation.
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, I know it's weird because I'm with you. I would much rather have two quarterbacks than three. But I also feel like, because after you see Joe Milton, you're like, man, we're pretty fortunate here with what he's done the last two games. He looks like he's figured it out a little bit. And then with Sam Howell, not that he's blown the lid off of anything, but I also feel like you kind of have a pretty good backup in him if you have him around.
Right.
Like, I just feel like I'm pretty confident that he'll be able to go do something that looks like a reasonable quarterback and doesn't look like Ben DiNucci. That was a tough one,
of
dude.
The hat empire.
Yeah, and so that's where I'm like, hey, you know, and I know the Joneses sometimes feel this, we got a plethora of these things. Why would we let one of them go? Well, because you got to figure out these other roster spots. But at this point, Kevin, I don't know if I'm ready to move on from that. But Liufau hasn't shown me anything defensively that makes me say okay.
I gotcha.
And I can't say that the special teams that I've paid enough attention to him on special teams to say he's earned whatever to get there. I feel like we're just kind of waiting time for him.
Now let's go to Jaden Blue, who he said he was talking to one of the guys from DallasCowboys.com. And I really love
on the internet.
That's right. Well, it was in real life, but
oh,
yes.
Okay.
Then it made its way to the internet.
Yeah.
And Jaden Blue said, of course my speed will stand out, but I think that I'm also a tough runner. This is the part I liked. I can run between the tackles, and it might sound crazy, but I'd rather run between the tackles than run outside zone and stuff like that. I'm trying to perfect my game at every level, not just in the passing game. So, obviously, a lot of people have talked about either pass-catching ability or pass-block ability, but what do you think about the concept of I'd rather run between the tackles than run on the outside? Do you want to see that, and is that the proper usage of his skill set?
Yes, both. For him, okay?
Okay.
I think him, and I've seen him do it between the tackles a couple times too. Last year he ran between the tackles, and those were some good plays for him. If you go line up, Kevin, and that linebacker goes, "Oh, Jaden Blue's in the game outside." Outside sweep, guys. Don't worry about it. We know what we're doing out there.
But you can go more or less up the gut.
But if you can go back both in and out, then they're going to say, "Well, we got to protect this A gap here." You know, like, and then so that creates a second that gives Blue that much more speed. And so, yeah, I've seen him run in there before. I don't necessarily need to see him go in there and plow through a linebacker, but I can see him go in there and find that hole, hit it, and be gone. And so, yes, absolutely. I would love to see that from him a little bit more, because I think he can be a home run on a cutback. I think he can be a home run on an outside sweep. He just needs those opportunities in real game against real opponents.
From the 469, how can you predict the Cowboys' record if we haven't seen the starters play? It's the backups that are playing pretty well. That's where it goes back to being there in Oxnard for training camp and seeing everything and hearing everything.
Yeah, the starters, most of the starters offensively look like they already did.
Yeah.
Except for Steele.
That is true. And the joint practices and everything like that. It's that level against other competitions or even intra-squad competition that you're like, hold on, this looks a little bit different. You can see that the secondary looks a little bit different. Now, I'm not willing to say all the way different, of course, or else I'd have been like, oh, they're easily 12-5. But I've seen enough that I think 10-7 feels more feasible than I would have thought prior to the start of the season.
Yeah, and quite honestly, I have some other questions about the linebacker adjustments and how that's going to look now.
Sure.
That Barham's shown us that, and how that's going to be. So,
which is what you always hope coming out of training camp, right? Is you hope that you get to higher levels of problems.
Yeah.
Where you're not like, I don't know who the hell's going to be the 10th or
11th. Is
somebody
on the street we can go sign better than this guy?
Yeah.
That's what last year was.
And instead, you're like, ooh, is this now our primary backup because this guy is just better than we anticipated? Those are obviously the far better questions that come out of training camp.
Real quick, Kevin, according to Stephen Holder, Anthony Richardson Sr. will start the Colts' final preseason game against the Lions, and Shane Steichen said they will play the starters outside of Daniel Jones and Jonathan Taylor, but they will have starters out there for a series or two, so Anthony Richardson can be behind starters.
It's very smart.
If you want to trade him.
Exactly. Exactly. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for Baseball Nuggets. Hold up. The entire scouting department? Next on The Fan.
This will be the 12th pitch. Bauer, center field. That's on the barrel. He's watching. And it's flying. A two-run bomb. Jake Rakes. And the Brewers have the lead.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 through The Fan. Don't forget, on the baseball front, in the noon o'clock hour today, we will be giving away a 4-pack of tickets for Rangers Rays on Sunday, September 6th. And then on Monday, that's August 31st, Corey Majors will be throwing out the very first pitch at the Rangers game. And I hope you ask Skip for advice tomorrow at 12:22.
I have a question about this, and maybe I'll ask Skip this too, but y'all's thoughts, 877-881-1053. Glove or no glove?
No glove.
No glove.
No glove.
Yeah.
Nope.
I know normally it's no glove, no love, but in this scenario, I think that's the way to do it.
I've seen a variety of people
It'll
go out
better.
There. They have the glove. Some people don't. And I don't know if you look like you know what you're doing or you look like you don't know what you're doing with a glove.
So see, it's not even the lead up. It's the aftermath.
Like if I take my glove, is it more likely that that DeGrom will be like, "You want to catch?"
I don't think DeGrom is who I would pick.
Ivaldi just walk by and be like, "Hey man, you want to go have a catch?"
But like,
and I'll be like, "Nobody says that here."
You could look badass if you go out there with a glove and crush it. But if you go out there with no glove and for some reason you beef it, it'll be okay. But if you go out with a glove and you beef it, people are going to be like, come on, dude.
I'm not worried about beefing it.
You shouldn't have a glove.
I still need to find a mound just to, you know, get some. Because right now, Kevin, yesterday I did go to there's a netted enclosure near our house. I just went up and threw off of it or threw in it. and everything was fine from 60 feet, six.
Right.
You know, everything was fine. I was throwing where I wanted to. A little high and inside to right-handed batters, so that might be a situation. But everything was fine. I was getting it across. I'm good there. Then I went, they have this little field with a little mound, but grass is grown over, stickers everywhere. I went and threw off of it. Everything was fine there, but it's not the actual mound. So I'm not that worried about beefing it that much.
Okay.
Just I'm mostly worried about high and inside to a right-handed hitter and hitting the hitter in the face.
I believe they put a batter up there.
You know what? I may have confirmed yesterday.
Oh, no.
That you fellas might be able to get out on the field.
Okay.
So if that's a possibility, maybe. I mean, what are they going to do if you guys just walk out to the positions and one of you guys is a batter and one of you guys is catching? Are they going to tell us to leave?
Yeah. I didn't like that at all. Right now, I guess we will continue by firing up some baseball nuggets.
Sorry.
And let's start with the record-setting or almost Texas Rangers. Per Jared Sandler, who feels like the only person in the world that would keep track of this, but I love him for it. The Texas Rangers had 56 foul balls last night. That was the most in a major league game this year. And the second highest nine-inning foul ball total in franchise history, surpassed only by some random night in 2008 when they had 59. So look, if that's the kind of information you want, you need to be following Jared Sandler. He tells you a lot of probably more relevant baseball information, but I just thought that was fun. Most foul balls in 18 years for the Rangers.
That is a wild number.
It really
is. I never would have guessed somebody's tracking it, but I guess it makes sense because you are marking it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
See, I like to think Jared is the one keeping track of it. He's
all
just
the
sitting
foul
there,
balls.
And he's like, okay, 3-2. Oh, that's 4. And he just writes on a sheet of paper how many foul balls there have been all
19 years
night.
Ago, he would have been...
18 years ago.
18 years ago, he would have been... How old is he?
I don't know.
How old is Jared?
34-ish?
47?
32?
81?
That, okay, so let's just say
nobody
60.
Knows. He's one of those guys that keeps that close to the vest.
Does he? All right, now, since we played that highlight, let's talk about the Milwaukee Brewers. We played a home run highlight to just emphasize how the Brewers are rocking and rolling through baseball this year. It really is quite astonishing. They have the best record in all of baseball.
They're on a one-game lose streak right now.
That is true. But they're doing it in an unusual way. Prior to last night's game, they had the fewest home runs in baseball, 120. Yet they had the best record in baseball. How can that be? Well, they lead Major League Baseball in on-base percentage at .337. They have the lowest chase rate in baseball, only 27%. They're second in walk rate, 11%, third in stolen bases, and sacrifice bunts, 129 and 30, respectively. So, if you love small ball, and I know people for several years have complained about the lack of small ball here with the Rangers, the Milwaukee Brewers might be a secondary team for you to check out, except when they play the Rangers later this week, because they are doing it by not chasing, by walking, by stealing bases, sacrifice bunts, and everything like that.
That's not it, though.
No, that's a lot.
I know. That's offensively, Kevin.
True.
They have a 1.17 team whip right now.
Mm.
They are second in team strikeouts, pitching-wise, only to Philadelphia at 1269. And, Kevin, right now, I think if you look still, most of the teams that lead in strikeouts pitching-wise are in the playoff hunt. We've discussed that at length. I still want to know like how much that matters and why. But and then their team ERA, top three.
I mean, that does matter for sure, but they are also fifth in runs scored despite having the fewest home runs in Major League Baseball. That's pretty impressive.
Yes, and I think that's why they're as good as they are. They have both.
They do.
They have, except for home runs, they suck at that. But they're very good at pitching. They're very good at getting on base and creating runs. And that's why they're going to be a difficult team to beat in the playoffs.
From the 214, most foul balls is a meaningless stat. Yes. I'm glad that you picked up on that. Thank you for indulging
in
the conversation.
I don't know about that.
You think that's not cool, guys.
Okay.
I mean, think about that. That means those pitchers had to throw extra pitches.
Ooh, fun point. That is a good point. All right, let's go to the Marlins. And this, it amazes me to no end. The Marlins are 67-65. So they do have a better record than the first place Texas Rangers. However, they're four games out of the wild card. And because of that, a report came out yesterday from The Athletic that they had fired a large portion of their pro scouting department. And then Bob Nightingale came out and said it was all of them. They got rid of the entire scouting department. Now, there's a few things. Whether it actually was every single person or whether it was the vast majority of them. Do you not feel like the Miami Marlins are overachieving this year compared to where a lot of people thought they might be? They have an above 500 record and they spend $14 on their team.
Well, Kevin, they too, like the Brewers, are on a one-game losing streak. So that's tough for them.
Do you think that was what set off the firing? Probably. You lose one more game.
Also, I mean, here you are, Dana Brown, you know, with his mutual agreement to leave.
Lies.
And then this. I think this is just kind of proof. Is Jim Crane not going to hire anybody? No. You know why? They're not playing baseball next year. Why pay these guys if you don't need them? So they're going ahead and fire them now. Like, what do we need scouting for right now?
Right.
We need a scout in 2 years, you know? Right now, we don't need to scout. So they're firing them now to get ahead of the finances.
All right. Well, speaking of the finances, as you said, the middle of the pack is the Rangers and the Mariners. Their tax payroll is $208 million for the Rangers and $202 for the Mariners. The tax payroll for the Marlins is $83 million. And I believe their second highest paid player is Giancarlo Stanton, who hasn't been on that team in like 6 years.
Are they still paying Jeter?
That's a good question.
He doesn't even play for us.
Yeah, so if you take out Stanton, their payroll would be approximately $363 million less than the Los Angeles Dodgers. Like, what? And they can't scout.
Well, I mean,
well, they seem like they're doing something.
Again, they might not play baseball next year, Kevin. That's why they don't need scouts. Just like Houston doesn't need a GM anymore. So everything's fine.
Okay.
I would actually expect to see more scouting departments get let go.
All right.
You gotta whittle maybe some marketing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be some things that are going to happen in baseball here, Kevin.
Okay. I just don't think of the Marlins as, we need to cut more corners.
Well.
But.
It's an expensive city. Real estate there is not cheap.
Here we are. I assume that's correct. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we will talk with our Dallas Cowboys insider, Mickey Spagnola, right here on The Fan.
On Reddit, true crime doesn't come from journalists. It comes from the victims, the witnesses, and sometimes the suspects themselves.
Every Tuesday on Crimes of Reddit, we read these posts out loud.
I'm Sabrina Dianaroga.
And I'm Alexis Linkletter. One of us brings the story, the other goes in blind, reacting in real time, just like you.
New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Crimes of Reddit, available now wherever you get your podcasts.